I'm here to say it gets more difficult the second and third time. This guy could go. He had a triple-double with 20s across the board. Wrap your brain around that. 20s across the board. Not just a, I mean, James Harden, some of his triple-doubles have been phenomenal, where he goes for like 54 and 11 rebounds and 15 assists. That's an amazing game, right? To me, not as amazing as going at least 20 across the board. 20 points, 20 rebounds, 20 assists. Are you kidding me? From point guard, 20 rebounds? Come on. The guy's insane. Whether you like him, whether you're into his game or not, you've got to respect it. And same with James Harden. Look, I can't stand James Harden's game, but I respect it. All he has to do is tilt his head back, and they blow a whistle. He's conditioned NBA referees to, when you see the head go back, when you see the big beard go back, blow the whistle. He got fouled. He's letting you know. It's almost like when Barry Bonds was at the peak of his powers. He was known throughout baseball, even with the umpires. And umpires aren't real fond of players in general. But there was a good 2-3 year stretch there where if Barry didn't swing at a pitch, it was called a ball. Because the umpires had that much respect for his eye, for his command of the strike zone. So if Barry's not swinging at that, then it can't possibly be a strike. That's what James Harden gets. If his head goes back, he had to have been fouled. In that move with the head going back, that's why I call him the human Pez dispenser. I don't know if some of the audience might be too young to know exactly what Pez is all about. But if you know what Pez is all about, you're probably chuckling. How can you not? Because James Harden, when he throws that head back, I expect this giant piece of candy to come out of his throat. And I want that big piece of candy because I used to love Pez. Not the dispenser so much. I just like Pez because it was pure sugar. That's all. We were talking yesterday, Rick Tittle and I, about, I don't know if this would be a good test case. Whitley and Joe Spadoni are both, you're both in your 20s, correct? Okay. Are you familiar with Fun Dip or Lick-A-Made? You are? Oh, wow. I thought it was like way old school. So it's still in circulation? All right. So if you're unfamiliar, it's basically they give you a stick of sugar and you lick it and then you put it in three different flavors of colored sugar. What's the common denominator there? Sugar. It's just sugar. It's mainlining sugar. It's like the, what are the things that come in the straw? Sugar in a straw that people bake? Pie? Pixie sticks. That's right. It's the same basic concept. How did I get to Pixie sticks? From the Bucks being on TV. I don't know. That's just what happens in live radio. But it is a good jumping off point for what I wanted to get into in this segment, and that is the Eastern Conference playoffs. I'm so glad now. There's a number of reasons I'm glad that the Eastern Conference has taken a huge step forward in terms of relevance and having really shifted the balance of power in the NBA. It was so heavily skewed for the Western Conference for so long that there was talk. Some people were clamoring for them to, let's just go 1 through 16 for the playoffs. Instead of 8 teams from the West, 8 teams from the East, they have their individual tournaments, and then they meet in the NBA Finals. That's what makes the most sense, right? That's what they've been doing forever. But because the Western Conference was so clearly superior, there were some people that wanted them to just say, all right, let's take the top 16 teams, independent of what conference they play in, and seed them up for the playoffs. So you might have, I mean, in theory, hypothetically, you could have 12, 14 Western Conference. I mean, if they had done that last year, I should go back and see how many Western Conference teams would have been in last year's playoffs. You know what the text, that's what the Chilton Autobody text line is for. Because there's people out there just dying to do my research for me. Talk to me. Last year, if you just went 1 through 16, how many teams from the Eastern Conference would have made it? I'm not quite sure. I would guess 4 at the most. The Chilton Autobody text line, by the way, is 95795. And the phone lines are wide open right now at 888-957-9570. The main topics today, Warriors, of course. They're all, if the Warriors are in action, even if they're not in action, they are the Bay Area's team. They are the greatest basketball team on the planet. Maybe the greatest basketball team ever put together. So if they're anywhere near a news cycle, we will get sucked into it. But Tiger Woods has crashed the party today a little bit. He is a national story. He's a transcendent national story. In case you've been under a rock all day, Tiger Woods won the Masters for his 15th major. It's been, somebody on the text line said 14 years, or was it 11? Okay, 14 since his last Masters win. All right. And like I said, when he finally got back in the winner's circle last year, I think it was last calendar year, years are blending together. Once you get to a certain age, it blends together. But when he won, finally got back in the winner's circle, when he was walking up the 18th fairway, and basically the crowd just fell in behind him. The people who are, look, I've covered golf a little bit in my career. I always used to go cover the AT&T because when I was a sports editor at the Pacifica Tribune, and the designer of the course, and here's how I finagled my way into this, and I'm kind of proud of this. I pulled this a number of times throughout my career. Here's how I got into the Pebble Beach Pro-Am for four consecutive years with a media credential, because the golf course in Pacifica was designed by Alistair McKenzie, who also helped design Pebble Beach. And so, look, there's the local connection. Pacifica's all over it. Can I go to that? Yeah. And they let me go. And that was basically my budget. But Tiger Woods, if his comeback, some people won't even call it a comeback, with apologies to LL Cool J, because they say, well, it's not a comeback if you brought it all on yourself. I kind of agree with that, but that doesn't apply here to Tiger. Did he bring a lot of it on himself? Yeah, a ton of it. And it was so unsavory what he brought upon himself that it was really easy to say, you know what, that's it, I'm done with Tiger. I hope he never wins again. There are some people that were like that. I hope he never wins again. But it wasn't just self-destruction. It was his body let him down. His club head speed was what separated him from so many other golfers. Frightening how hard that guy would swing. You watch him and you think, God, that's a back problem waiting to happen. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM, and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, radio.com sports station. Also the home of the Warriors. We'll get back into the Warriors in a minute. But the big story that actually dropped the Warriors, and I can't remember the last time I turned this microphone on at the start of a show and didn't lead with the Golden State Warriors. And now the Warriors are in the playoffs. That's what we've been waiting for all year. Oh my God, the regular season is too long. Can we just get to the playoffs? It's what we've been waiting for months. And now that it's here, and it got bumped off the top story by Tiger Woods winning the Masters. And the image that I will happily forever have in my head of his son running up to him at virtually the same spot that Tiger and his dad had that embrace just off the green. I mean, that in itself was a great golf moment, a great sports moment, period. And to have Tiger's son, not only did he run out to his daddy in the same spot that daddy hugged his daddy way back when, but he's wearing the same outfit. It was so cool. I mean, every time I mention it, I get goosebumps. Just awesome, awesome stuff. And America does love a comeback. Now, we like to tear our guys down, right? If you get too good, eventually, we will turn on you. We will want bad things to happen to you. Like, look at Tom Brady. Is there any reason to not like Tom Brady? No, by all accounts, he's a really good guy. He's smart. He's funny. He's a good teammate. He works his butt off. But there's some people out there who want Tom Brady to fail. Why? I don't know. It's just a weird. I don't quite understand why. I guess it's jealousy. I would imagine has to be at the top of the list, right?
When I felt them, they were perfect.
What was that?
When I felt them, they were perfect. So I would zip those things up and lock them away.
Is he talking about his balls? Oh, that's good stuff. But yeah, you reach a certain point. You reach the pinnacle. You establish yourself as better than everybody else. And all of a sudden, people want to see you fall. LeBron James, people would love to see him succumb to some sort of something dirty, something nasty, something, I can't believe LeBron James did that. But secretly, they're like, yeah, finally LeBron has to take a hit. Mr. Perfect. That's just the way we are. But after the fall, and here's where it gets weird, we want them to come back and go back to being great. After wanting them to fall from the throne, all of a sudden we want them to get back on the throne. It's just a weird dynamic in sports. But Tiger got back on the throne today. Yeah, he won that tournament at the end of the last season, and it was awesome. As I said, the gallery filling in behind him. If he had not won another tournament after that, I would have thought that was one of the cooler sports stories I've seen in my lifetime, because I have always been a Tiger fan. Obviously not a fan of the things that he did to his wife, to his children, to his family, to the people that are associated with Tiger Woods. All of that, of course, how can you not be disgusted by all of that that happened? But I'm a Tiger Woods fan. I am a bad golfer. I enjoy watching really good golfers, and he's a really good golfer. It's as simple as that. I feel blessed that to have lived through Tiger Woods' prime. I got to see him have an impact on a sport like I don't think we will ever see again. And I'm not talking just about the tour. I'm talking about the sport of golf. You know why all the golfers love Tiger now? Not just because he's become a better dude, and he has become a better dude, but it's because Tiger Woods is the reason purses for tournaments are where they're at. Before Tiger, it was a fraction of what guys are making for victories nowadays. Now, your payday is well over $1 million for winning a tournament. And they all know that they have Tiger to thank for that. Where does that money come from? Well, there's TV money. There's sponsorship money. More of that, more of that, more of that, more of that comes in when Tiger Woods is relevant. Even more comes when Tiger is dominant. Now, will Tiger get back to being dominant? Who knows? Who cares? This victory today cements it. In my mind, he just pulled off something that only Ben Hogan can relate to. In the sport of golf, there's only been one comeback that even comes close to what Tiger has done. And it's Ben Hogan. But look at what Tiger, again, the sport of golf. Tiger has built golf courses. I'm not saying he built them himself, but Golf Magazine did a whole big, I think it was an entire issue dedicated to Tiger's impact on the sport. And this was when he was at the peak of his powers. It was some ridiculous number, like 1,800 golf courses, 1,800 new golf courses had been built in the 3 years from the time Tiger won his first Masters. Over the next 3 years, 1,800 new golf courses in America were either opened or were in construction, under construction. Okay, so with that, why are there more courses? Well, it's supply and demand. We've got more golfers than we have golf courses for anymore. Now everybody has a six-hour round and you have to wait. There's no more walking on. You got to have a tee time because there's no way there's going to be an opening. These courses are all packed. Okay, well, let's build more courses to get more golfers in. Great. I mean, just imagine the financial impact of that alone. But then when Tiger fell off, when all the personal problems started coming, guess how many golf courses, now I'm paraphrasing this, and these are round numbers, so don't stick me if I'm not absolutely 100% correct with it. But over the three-year span, remember, from the time Tiger won the Masters, over the next 3 years, close to 1,800 golf courses were built. Okay, now let's go to, was it Thanksgiving when he ran into, well, you know, Ellen came after him with, I don't know, I think it was a lob wedge or something like that. It was crazy. But you know what I'm talking about.
Hey, it's Tiger.
Again, every radio station in the country is playing that drop, and they should be playing it because it's funny. It makes me laugh every single time. But in the 3 years after that, that first incident, guess how many golf courses shut down? More than 1,800. More than had been built. That's how much. When Tiger was bad, when Tiger wasn't in the hunt, when Tiger wasn't on TV, people weren't as interested in watching golf, playing golf, talking about golf. This is one man. We're talking about a total of 3,600 golf courses either opening or closing because of one guy's supremacy. That is impact on a sport. That is transcendent. That is how you bump the Warriors off. Their flagship station is the lead story on a Sunday. But you think we're going to veer all that far off the Warriors' path? No, we're not. But I still would like to hear. We've got some time left together. We've got about 50 minutes left together. And we've gotten some really good comeback stories. Some calls have been great. Somebody pumped up their son. Yeah, their son had a torn ACL, and he came back, and he fought, and he got a scholarship. That's a great story. It doesn't have to be about superstars. I want to hear what your favorite or your best comeback is in the history of sports for you. Just for you. Again, there's no wrong answer here. 888-957-9570. The Chilton Autobody text line, 957-95. 415 agrees with me. Yeah, people just get jealous. I just want to see someone fail. I guess they're putting themselves in the other person's head. Westbrook said, did you see the shoes that Westbrook had in tribute to Nipsey Hussle? Fantastic. Really cool tribute. Really cool shoes. So that's what that text was about. And let's see one more. If Tom Brady played his whole career in Kansas City instead of New England, he would be universally loved. I don't know. You buy that? Whitley's got Kansas City ties. Whitley, you buy that? If Tom Brady was a Chief, would he be universally loved? She's busy producing. What am I doing? Trying to get her on. It's break time anyway, which means we've got one more monster segment together, right? When we come back from this break, it is balls to the wall all the way until 7 o'clock. We are going to do some good for ball, bad for ball. I still want your greatest comebacks in sports history. Shout out Tiger Woods. Unbelievable. And we'll also be talking with Connor Letourneau of the San Francisco Chronicle. Get back into some Warriors basketball right here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Throw your hands in the air. Little Outcast, 617 on a Sunday. Nicely done, Joe Spadoni. Joe's on the ones and twos. He is our board op for the day. Whitley Sandretto, she is my producer for the day. It's been a long time since I got to work with Whitley. Very nice to do that. Everything's always very buttoned up when Whitley is the producer. When she says we're going to have a guest at this time, that guest will be there at that time. Our next guest, we haven't gotten him just yet. We're going to get to the phone lines. Our next guest is going to be Connor Letourneau, Warriors beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Let's go to Mechanic Mike in San Bruno. He's got a comeback in mind. What's up, Mechanic?
What's up, man? So for me, I know I could easily say the 23 comeback Super Bowl because I'm a huge Pats fan. But for me, it was really the 14 AFC Championship game against the Ravens where they came back not once, but twice from a 14-point deficit. And the fact that Belichick did it by getting way creative with a bunch of really no-name players. I mean, when's the last time you heard anything out of Michael Manalmanui, right? I mean, guys that nobody knew anything about.
Gesundheit.
And came back twice. So for me, that was it. And I just wanted to touch on Tiger Woods. Just the fact that I was able to see all of his greatness and that famous shot on number 16 where that Nike logo paused right above the hole. Nobody's greater than Tiger, and I was just thrilled to see him win another majors.
Thank you for the phone call, Mechanic Mike. Yeah, there's a lot of people out there. If you love sports, if you're not a Tiger hater, you had to love what happened today. Even if you're ambivalent about Tiger, even if you know nothing about golf, what happened today should move you. It's absolutely moving. And I tell you, every time I see the replay of Tiger's boy running towards him wearing the same gear that dad's got on, that's just a cool human moment. Forget about sports. That's just a damn cool human moment. Let's go to Brian in San Leandro. What's up, Brian? How are you?
Hey, what's up? Thanks for taking my call. So basically, it's kind of a sad story, but with a really cool moment. It's like I just lost my stepmom, right? And my dad, they've been married for over 35 years. Mm-hmm. She died on Thursday, right? And so the whole family's together. We're all together. We're dealing with the funeral. We're dealing with life insurance. We're dealing with all this stuff. And we finally get a day off. It's Sunday, right? And we finally get a day off, and I'm sitting at home, and I'm watching this. And I call my dad. I'm like, are you watching this? He's like, watching what? What are you talking about? And I'm like, dude, you got to turn on channel blah, blah, blah. You know, the Masters, you got to watch this. And we just sat there on the phone, and it was just a great father-son moment just to watch Tiger Woods make America great again. Like, I swear to God, it was so good. It's ultimately one of the best sports moments I've ever seen in my life. And I just want to leave it at that. It's beautiful. It was a beautiful moment.
Brian, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it. And I'm sorry for your loss. You can hear the emotion coming through the speakers with Brian there. Real quick, let's get Ben in San Jose before we get to Connor Letourneau of the Chronicle. Ben, what's going on?
Hey, Herb. Hey, you know, he hit a good point. I mean, not just one of the greatest comeback moments, but maybe one of the great sport moments in history, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I mentioned George Foreman as one of the great sports moments that, you know, the comeback moments that I remember. But do you remember the 68 Olympics?
Did we lose him?
I'm here.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Did you ask me something about the 68 Olympics?
Yeah, do you remember the 68 Olympics?
I was born in 1968, so no, I do not.
Okay. There was an African runner who got hurt halfway through the marathon, and to make it quick, it was in Mexico City. He didn't give up the race. He hurt his knee, and he literally hobbled in about 5 hours later when all the runners had come in like 3 hours before. Mm-hmm. And the most compelling thing about it, the sun was going down, and the stadium was packed waiting for him.
No way.
His entry into, oh yeah. If you never heard about or read the story, you should.
Yeah, I gotta check it out. I'm surprised nobody's written a book about it. That's a really cool story. Thank you for that. We gotta go. I'm sorry, Dre, sit tight. I'll get to you as soon as we're done with Connor. But when you've got a rock star, when you've got Secretariat in your stable, you gotta let him run. And Connor Letourneau is that for us. He covers the Warriors for My Sporting Green and does a hell of a job. If you want to follow him on Twitter, and I suggest you do, he is at @Con_Cron. Connor, what's happening, man? How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. That was quite the introduction. Not sure I can live up to that one.
Dude, I mean, I'm a huge fan, man. I mean, your game stories are great, but game stories you can find anywhere. It's your off-day stories that I really love because I always tell the audience I'm into people stories. When it comes to sports writing, that's the best sports writing is something that gives you kind of a feel for what the subject is like outside the lines, and I think you do a really nice job of that. So it's not, I'm not just blowing smoke because you're a guest. I really do appreciate
really
your work.
I appreciate that.
All right, so what did you learn last night that you didn't know already about Warriors-Clippers?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, the thing I really learned is, in terms of kind of a negative, I guess, is that DeMarcus Cousins is not – this is not a good matchup for DeMarcus Cousins. He really struggled. He had probably his worst game in a month or so, maybe even longer. And it feels like this is really going to be a Kevon Looney series. So, you know, you're going to see a lot of death lineup. You're going to see a lot of Kevon. And that's obviously got to be tough for DeMarcus, who is playing in his first playoff series ever. And, you know, very kind of frustrating for him. But I think as long as they're winning and they make the next round, he'll probably be okay with that. And then beyond that, I mean,
Connor, I'm sorry to interrupt. I want to ask you a question related to this. Is it possible that Boogie was just a little bit too wound up because it was his first playoff game? And because I used the phrase earlier today, like I'm willing to give him a pass, and I'm just going to assume that he was kind of overwhelmed with the emotion, and you know, there had to be a million different things going through that cat's head. And I think that may have affected the way he played, but you think it's more of a matchup thing?
I think it's a matchup thing. I think he also was a little bit caught off guard by how they defended him. Whenever he was near the perimeter, they just completely sagged off him. And you saw him hit that three early, but after that, he seemed a little bit hesitant. I mean, you have to keep in mind, this is the guy who has been double and triple teamed almost his entire career. Now he's in a situation in the highest stakes games he's ever played where he has guys trying not to guard him, which is can almost be tougher than facing a double or triple team when you're used to facing
no doubt
or triple team. So I think that was part of it too.
So do you expect, so you said you think this might be a Kevon Looney type of series. Why you go straight to Kevon Looney and you're bypassing Andrew Bogut? Is that because Looney is just so good? Obviously, Bogut can't jump out on the pick and roll, and you know that's where Kevon really makes his dough, right? By being that five who can jump out and switch at any time, as opposed to, okay, if it's not working with DeMarcus, let's see if Andrew can get it done.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Clippers roster, they don't really have a prototypical traditional center outside of Zubac. And Zubac, you know, didn't play a lot last night. And I see them obviously leaning really heavily on Montrezl Harrell, who might be their second-best player behind Lou Williams. And I think that Kevon matches up a lot better with someone like Harrell. And it's going to be interesting for Kevon because, you know, this is a guy who – you know, his importance has kind of fluctuated throughout the regular season, but this is an important series for him. And then if they end up facing the Rockets in the second round, we all know that he is a phenomenal matchup against what the Rockets do, you know, guarding guys like Chris Paul and James Harden in isolation. So this could be a really big playoffs for that guy who's going to be, you know, an unrestricted free agent this summer.
The voice you hear is that of Connor Letourneau. He's a Warriors beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. You can follow him on Twitter at @con_cron. Connor just joined us, so if you have a question you would like me to ask Connor on your behalf, hit us up. Do it on the Chilton Autobody text line 95795. I'll be taking a look through it, and if you got a good question and I deem it to be a good question, Connor will field that question. Connor, Steph Curry last night was phenomenal, and we know that he is phenomenal, but was that any sort of, I'm not a big fan of, and not a believer in, well, this was a statement game, or this statement that, and I've seen Steph kind of sarcastically refer to statements, but I do think every once in a while he takes the floor hell-bent on reminding everybody exactly who he was, and I get a sense that last night was one of those nights.
Yeah, you know, the thing that really impressed me about his performance last night was, yeah, he hit eight threes. Yeah, he became the all-time playoff three-pointers leader, beating out Ray Allen. But what really blew me away was everything else he did. His defense was really solid, and Patrick Beverley held Beverley to 1-for-6 shooting. He had a career playoff record, 15 rebounds.
That's a regular season record, too, isn't it? I don't think he's ever had 15 playoffs or regular season.
I think so, yeah. No, he was just so he was all over the floor last night, and it felt like he was impacting the game in every possible way. And I think what I kind of wrote about today is that this is a guy who I think sometimes gets pigeonholed as a shooter. As, you know, when you're the greatest of something, it's easy to just be known as that. But the reality is, if Curry could not hit a three-pointer, he'd still be one of the better point guards in the league because he's above average defensively, he's a great passer, he's a great rebounder for his position. And I don't think that the average NBA fan appreciates all those other aspects of his game.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I've been saying this for a while, that Steph Curry's rebounding is far and away the most underrated aspect of his game, to the point where I heard Clay in an interview, I think it was during media day this year, maybe it was a couple of days after that, but he basically said his goal, one of the weaknesses in his game, he feels, is rebounding. And he says, I want to get to the point where I can say I rebound like Steph. And that, like, I had never even thought that guys would look up to Steph's rebounding ability, but that's just one more area in which he blows up conventional norms.
Yeah, no, he actually finished the regular season fourth among point guards in rebounding behind Russell Westbrook, James Harden, and Ben Simmons. I don't think that's something that people would have guessed. He's pretty sneaky about it. You know, he and a lot of his rebounds are uncontested. He's really good at grabbing those long rebounds, knowing exactly where the ball is going to bounce based off where it hits the rim, and he's really good at understanding angles. And you know, it shouldn't be surprising given that all the offensive aspects of his game employ some of those same, you know, skills, the hand-eye coordination, just the overall feel for the game. And so, yeah, no, he is a truly exceptional rebounder for his position, and I think last night was a really good reminder of that.
Connor Letourneau covers the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. You can follow him on Twitter, and please do. He's a great follow. At Cron underscore Cron, at C-O-N underscore C-H-R-O-N. Last night, this is not a new approach. We've seen this before, but the Clippers basically daring Draymond Green to shoot from the outside. I don't think I've ever seen teams dare Boogie to the level that the Clippers were doing it last night, but I understand where that comes from. What will it take for them to respect Draymond and go out and guard him? Is he going to have to hit 4 or 5 in the same game?
I'm not sure Draymond can do anything for them to fully respect him, just because when you're drawing up a game plan for the Warriors, you really have to pick your poison, and you need to leave certain vulnerabilities just so you can pay attention to the Kevin Durants and the Steph Currys and the Klay Thompsons of the world. So I think that the Clippers, you know, if it's a situation where they lose because Draymond Green hit 7 threes, they will take that. You know, they'll say, you know what, good job, Draymond Green. Props to you. But you know, they're willing to play the odds with that one, because letting Draymond Green shoot threes is a better option than, you know, letting Draymond and DeMarcus shoot threes is a better option than letting any of those three other starters shoot threes. So they're just kind of playing the odds. I actually thought that Doc Rivers did a really nice job yesterday. I think he has a good game plan for the Warriors. I just don't think his team is talented enough. You know, I think this is going to be a series where there's going to be some close games through the first half, and then the Warriors just pull away because they just have the horses that the Clippers don't.
Yeah, I mean, they're just wave after wave after wave. If Draymond hits 7 threes in a game, I think you should just drop the mic and go home.
Yeah, I completely agree.
But yeah, I don't see that happening. Now, I mean, we all know that Boogie is not a bad shooter from three. I mean, in fact, for his size, he's a good shooter from three, but I would still, look, I'll take him beating me from outside as opposed to beating me up on the inside, which is what he's kind of equipped to do, which brings us to back to Montrez. I didn't know that his game was that strong. It's not often that you see somebody that Boogie is having a hard time with, not in terms of being nimble or athletic, but in just terms of in the paint, banging bodies, I'm stronger than you or you're stronger than me. That's how this particular possession is going to play out. I didn't know that Montrez had that in him.
Yeah, I described it to someone the other day. I feel like Montrez Harrell is the player that Kenneth Freed wanted to be.
Good point. That's a great one.
I mean by that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just a relentless, all-energy workhorse. He's not especially skilled, but he goes after the rebound. He gets the putbacks, and he's physically a very imposing guy. And, you know, this has been really a breakout year for him. If you remember, just a year or so ago, he was a role player for the Rockets. And now here he is, you know, top two or three player for a playoff team, sixth man of the year candidate. I think he got, you know, a real opportunity with the Clippers that he hadn't gotten at any other stop in his career, and he's just running with it.
You think he's going to be starting in game two?
I don't think so.
No?
Because the Clippers have had a lot of success with bringing him and Lou Williams off the bench. I don't see them making any drastic moves. It'll be interesting to see what tweaks Doc Rivers makes, though, because he seemed downright vexed during postgame last night talking about Curry. He said, you know, this guy has killed us all season. When he sees our jersey, he must see red like a bull. And, you know, we need to figure out something to do differently on him. But you look at their roster, and they don't really have anyone that can stop Curry. They don't have, you know, that wing defender that you need against someone like Curry. So I would expect the rookie Shea to not go up against him as much as he did in game one because he struggled so much. But I can't think of anyone that would be better, to be honest with you.
And if Doc Rivers does come up, if he becomes that first guy to figure it out, how to stop or slow Steph Curry, we've got Klay Thompson waiting in the wings, the second best shooter of all time. Oh, and we also have Kevin Durant, one of the best scorers of all time. It's like, okay, fine, shut Steph down. We've got so much firepower, we don't need him.
That's right. I mean, you know, Klay had a really quiet game. Durant was content to, you know, be his efficient self, and it didn't really matter, you know.
Connor, what do you make of that? Much has been made of KD's approach to the game over the past couple of weeks, to where he's seemed to want to establish himself as a facilitator first and foremost. He's always been a very efficient guy offensively, but he's taking that almost to an extreme with the amount of shots that he's taking. He's just not jacking it up. And is that his recognition of, okay, the playoffs are a different game, I'm going to bring something different to the table during the postseason? Is he just, I want to show off my all-court game? What do you think is behind what seems to me a fairly obvious and clear, he's moving in a different direction from what he was before, let's say, 2-3 weeks ago. His game is different. He's approaching the game differently, right?
Right, for sure. You know, I've always said I think that Durant's biggest asset, his biggest skill, is the ability to know exactly what his team needs at any given moment, on any given night, and provide that. You know, he's shown throughout his career a remarkable knack for throttling up his offense or throttling down his offense based off what the game dictates. And I feel like he believes right now that given how Steph is playing, given how Klay has been playing, given what DeMarcus has done over the past month, that they just don't need him to score a lot. And I think that's true. You know, they've been winning games with him being hyper-efficient, facilitating, playing good defense. I mean, he's in the past 6 or 7 games, he's shooting almost 70% from the field. He's only averaging like 18 points per game because he's not shooting that much.
Right.
But, I mean, to me, he's been downright masterful. I'm more impressed by a guy who can score, you know, 20 points on 8 shots than someone who can score 30 on 20 shots. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Connor, can we call you right back? We've got a problem with the phone line, and I'm sure it's killing the audience. We'll call you right back, okay?
Okay, cool.
All right, Connor Letourneau of the San Francisco Chronicle. It sounds like he's, I don't know, in a tunnel or something like that. Sorry, Whitley. Can we call him back and try to get him, see if his phone line can be a little bit more clear? I got a couple of more questions from him, and one of those is going to be based on what we've seen now. At the end of today's action, we'll have seen everybody in the playoffs in game one. And I'm curious to find out, not just from Connor, but I'd love to hear from you guys as well at 888-957-9570. At one point during the season, I thought the Jazz, believe it or not, were the team that would give the Warriors the hardest time in the postseason. That was very early in the regular season. I'm well off the Jazz now, and I'm wondering if there are a bunch of other people who have a totally different answer than they did to the same question early in the year. It looks like we've got Connor back. Connor, are you with us?
Yeah, thanks. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what the issue was.
No problem. You sound much, much better now, though. I was just mentioning we will have seen every team in the playoffs in one game thus far. And look, you've had the benefit of having the best seat in the house on the best team on the planet, but you've gotten a chance to evaluate all the teams that have come through and have tried to take down the champs. If somebody asked you at the start of the season, who is the biggest threat to the Warriors in the Western Conference, would your answer today be different than it was at the start of the season?
Probably not.
Who you got then?
At the start of the season, it was the Rockets, and it's still probably the Rockets. That has actually changed at different points of the season. A couple months ago, I probably would have said OKC. There were times when, I would have said maybe Denver, but right now I'd have to go with the Rockets. But to be completely honest with you, I heard you talking a little bit about the Jazz. Everyone's saying, oh, wow, what if, the Warriors face the Rockets in the second round? The truth is, I think if you gave a lot of Warriors players truth serum, they'd actually rather play the Rockets than the Jazz.
Really?
Because you look at how the Warriors have done the past couple years against the Jazz. They've struggled with the Jazz more than any team in the league. They've lost by 30, 40 points in Salt Lake City. And you don't want to put too much stock in the regular season because the regular season is kind of moot when it comes to this team. But I do think that matchup-wise, the Jazz are the toughest matchup, maybe definitely in the Western Conference and maybe in the league. Now, does that mean that they could really push the Warriors in the seven-game series? I don't think so. But I think they could at least wear them down and give them enough trouble where whoever faces them in the West Finals is going to be in an enviable position because they're going to be facing a pretty beleaguered, tired Warriors team.
We're talking Warriors basketball with Con Letourneau. He covers the Dubs for the San Francisco Chronicle. Follow him on Twitter at @Con_Cron. Now let's look over at the Eastern Conference, Connor. I think you agreed with me a couple of weeks ago when I said I feel like of the top five teams in the NBA, four of them are in the Eastern Conference. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think the Warriors' four biggest threats are in the East.
Now, what happened yesterday with Philly losing, that was a stunner. There's no two ways about it. That I was shocked at that outcome. That doesn't change the way I feel about the 76ers, though. How about you?
No. I mean, I think that especially these teams that don't have a ton of playoff experience, when you're the favorite, it's easy to kind of come in and lay an egg in game one, especially when you're facing a really inspired underdog that has nothing to lose. So I expect, not just them, but really, the crazy thing about yesterday was the Warriors were the only home team that won.
I know.
I expect those other teams to kind of figure things out, get refocused. I think Philly will be fine. I think Philly's just way too talented. They should be able to figure it out.
Who's the Western Conference Coach of the Year? Doc Rivers has got to get some late votes, don't you think?
Definitely. It's probably between Doc and Mike Brown. Mike Brown.
I was going to say, wow.
My apologies. From the Nuggets. Mike Malone, what he's done mm-hmm. with Denver this season, they've completely outpaced expectations. I think they're a good 2 or 3 years ahead of where people thought they'd be in their rebuild. So I'd probably give it to Malone, but I can understand why people would say Doc just because of what they did after trading their best player, Tobias Harris, to Philly. I mean, actually being better than they were previously and, riding a group whose best player is probably Lou Williams, kind of a journeyman bench guy to the playoffs. I mean, that's downright impressive.
Yeah, when they traded Harris to the Sixers, I felt like that was them waving the white flag, saying, all right, we're done for the year. Let's reload.
I think it was. That's the funny thing. I think the front office thought it was. And then Doc Rivers is just such a good coach that they kept winning. That's the crazy thing.
So who do you see coming out of the East, or is it just too early? I mean, we're going to find out a lot about some of these teams because they are in their first dance, so to speak. You know, the Celtics, they're young guys. I think last year's experience is going to prove invaluable to them this year. I know that they've kind of been a mess. They've been all over the place trying to, you know, I think the general perception going into the year was that the Celtics were going to be the beast in the East because you'll be putting Kyrie, a healthy Kyrie and a healthy Gordon Hayward, in with this team that almost took LeBron down in the Eastern Conference Finals. Well, it hasn't exactly panned out that way.
Yeah, I keep waiting for the Celtics team from parts of last season. I keep waiting for that talent to really coalesce, but it just hasn't happened. And at this point, now we're in the playoffs, I can't just expect it to suddenly, you know, appear once the stakes are heightened. I don't think it's a Warriors situation. I think this is a team that needed to show some things in the regular season for you to believe in them in the postseason. In terms of the East, I've been kind of a fan of Toronto all season, and I still would pick them. I just think that they don't have a real hole in their roster. I love their bench. I love their role players. I'm a big Pascal Siakam guy. I think they're well coached.
You just like saying Pascal Siakam.
I just love, yeah, exactly. New Mexico State alum, Pascal Siakam. I think that they're the one team that I look at from the East or really in the league at all. And I say, you know what? It's viable. It's feasible that team could beat the Warriors in a 7-game series.
Wow.
I'm not saying they would, but I think it's possible.
Right. All I know is that the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, I've been looking forward to the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs for months, because if the matchups fall the way the way they're slotted, the way they're seeded, so to speak, it's going to be four teams that all have a legitimate claim at the Eastern Conference title. I don't think any team is going to be an overwhelming favorite in any of those series. You agree with that?
No, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, I'm kind of just excited for the NBA Finals. It feels weird saying that after game one of the first round.
I get it, though.
But I feel like this is going to be a really fun NBA Finals. It's just going to be nice. Assuming the Warriors make it, it's just going to be nice to see them go against a different team. I was getting kind of tired of the Cleveland trip. It feels like kind of the dawn of a new era. And I think whoever they face coming out of the East, it's going to be a test. So it should be a lot of fun.
You've had enough of Cleveland in June for a lifetime.
Yeah, no, and I hear Toronto in June is beautiful. So that's the real reason I'm high on Toronto. I just want to go there in June.
Toronto is beautiful at all times. And if you get a chance to, and you got a little extra dough, go to a restaurant. Impossible for you to forget the name of this restaurant, Connor. The name is Urban. Go check it out.
Oh.
Quality food. I'll give you my ID. You can make it a fake ID. When I showed them that my last name was Urban, I got a free appetizer. We'll try to swing that for you, too, if it happens.
No relation to the owners, though.
No relation whatsoever.
Okay.
But I faked it, and I got free food out of it. So let's try to get you some free food, too. Oh. We got to do something to thank you for being so gracious with your time. I really do appreciate it, Connor. I know we're going to be talking to you a ton over the next, the playoffs end in next January, right? Yeah, we'll be talking to you a number of times between now and then. Thank you so much, Connor.
All right, appreciate you.
Bye. Connor Letourneau of the San Francisco Chronicle. That means our last guest of the day is done. Whitley Sandretto has been working very, very hard to come up with topics for Good for Ball, Bad for Ball, and her list is fantastic, and so away we go.
It's time for Good for Ball.
Oh, that was outstanding.
Or Bad for Ball.
That is a disgusting act.
Here's Michael Urban.
All right, all right, all right. We do mean everything. And priests, don't hang up, because I'm going to get you involved in Good for Ball, Bad for Ball. If you would like to get involved in it as well, 888-957-9570. We've got about 8 more minutes together, so if you want to play, dial those numbers. All right. Everything in life can be labeled one of two ways, good for ball or bad for ball. It doesn't have to be baseball. It doesn't have to be sports. Everything in life. I mean, my go-to explanation is Stouffer's Turkey Tetrazzini is good for ball. And I need to let you know this, Joe Spadoni. I found it. It took me four different grocery stores to find it, but I did find Stouffer's Turkey Tetrazzini. Are you working next weekend? I will bring you, and I know that Gabe's a doubter too, so I will bring you. You're not working next weekend? All right, well, I'll keep it in the freezer. Anyway, we'll get, it's as simple as that, though. Like, everything can be good for ball or bad for ball. Somebody cuts you off in traffic, that's obviously bad for ball. You let somebody in front of you who's got their blinker on, that's good for ball. If they don't wave, if they don't acknowledge that, that's bad for ball. It's simple. It's the same game everybody else plays with their own shows. There's buy or sell. There's puff, puff, pass, all that. Kind of the same type of deal, except mine's better. All right. Got Whitley's list in hand here. And on its surface, this would sound like a duh. But it's not. There's layers to it. Tiger winning the Masters. Good for ball or bad for ball? Now, first thought would be, how on earth could that be bad for ball? Well, you'd be surprised. I'm sure there are a ton of people out there saying that's bad for ball. In fact, I would imagine the 408, they would answer this as bad for ball because their text on the Chilton Autobody text line is, wow, the deification of Tiger is nauseating. It diminishes what he's done to his family, in my opinion. Unfortunately, society puts skill and entertainment over all morality in terms of priorities. I understand that sentiment. I don't share that sentiment. But it's out there. I mean, look, there are people who, I mean, Tiger could open up 10 schools for disadvantaged youth. He could donate millions of dollars to any number of medical causes, trying to find cures for various diseases. He could do everything right from now until the day he dies, and there will be people who hate Tiger Woods. That's just the way it is. That's just the way of the world. But there are also some people who didn't like Tiger before, and now they do. Because why? Because they love a comeback story. It's a great comeback story. It's a great human interest story. That makes it great for ball. Not just good for ball, it is great for ball. Second on the list. I'm going to need your help, Whitley. Can you turn your mic on?
Hello.
Hi. Good job, by the way, on this list. Dad jokes is your second topic. Can you expand on that? Dad jokes.
I mean, dad jokes are just jokes that are, like,
corny?
Yeah, very corny.
Like, give me an example of a joke your dad told you that fell into the dad joke category.
What do you call a computer that can sing?
That can sing?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Adele.
Oh, wow. That's a good joke.
Thank you. I know.
That's not corny. That's clever. Oh, wow. Way to kill the mood. Kawhi. Whitley, what would you have answered Tiger winning the Masters? Good for ball, bad for ball?
I think it's good for ball.
Wow, you kind of hedged a little bit, though.
I mean, I'm just not a big golf person, but obviously I know Tiger Woods and the history with Tiger. Mm-hmm. So I say it's good for ball.
All right. Obviously, you are a fan of Game of Thrones.
Yes, I am.
Okay. And so the return of Game of Thrones would obviously be good for ball, right?
Yes, which is happening right now.
Yeah, which is why the next topic on your list is having to work during the premiere of Game of Thrones. I'm going to guess you threw that in so that you could say
bad for ball.
Yeah, that's your passive-aggressive way of saying to Danny, don't ever schedule me on a Sunday evening again. Not when Game of Thrones is gone. You know, I think I'm the only person on the planet who has not watched Game of Thrones. I've never watched an entire episode of Game of Thrones.
That's sad. I feel bad for you.
I'm afraid to, Whitley. I'm afraid if it's as great as everybody says, then I'll go down the rabbit hole, and next time you see me, I'll have a full beard, and I'll stick to high heaven, and I'll be trying to cut people's heads off.
probably wouldn't go that far, but you'd probably definitely get addicted to it.
Yeah, I hear it's fantastic. I mean, my God, Damon Bruce basically does a... he's going to be the curator of the Game of Thrones radio museum, because if he can work Game of Thrones into any one of his segments, he will. Patrick Beverly and all of his antics, good for ball or bad for ball. Look, I've said this a number of times. There is more than enough room in my life for a little bit of silliness. And when I think of Patrick Beverly, in addition to him being a tremendous lockdown defender and a little bit sneaky, better offensively than you would think, but he's just, there's a silliness about him. There's a lightness about him. Even though he's a villain, he's like a harmless villain. I in fact, enjoy watching him try to get under the skin of Curry and Durant. I think it's kind of like Lance Stevenson. Lance Stevenson is a knucklehead, but he's goofy. He's silly. There's room in my life for silliness. Ergo, good for ball. How about you, Whitley? Patrick Beverly and all his antics.
I'm for it. At first, he kind of got underneath my skin, but he's growing on me. He really is. And it's obviously very entertaining. Him and Durant last night, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean,
three more games.
And unless you are, excuse me, if you're not a diehard Warriors fan, there would have been very little reason to tune in to this round, right? Because you're probably not a Clippers fan either. But the fact that we have Patrick Beverly, and in game one, the enduring image is of Beverly standing chest to chest with Kevin Durant, looking up because Durant's about a foot and a half taller than him. That right there, that would keep me interested in this series. I'm very amused by Patrick Beverly. Okay, fans booing the home team. Where did you get this from, Whitley? Did the home team get booed somewhere recently? You have a bed for it? You have some sound on the home team getting booed, really?
The crowd was frustrated. Did you guys hear that? And does that have any effect?
I mean, if you're going to boo, then stay on that side. So I feel if you're a Sixers fan, you're going to boo, stay on that side.
Ben Simmons and the Philadelphia 76ers got booed at home. They lost their playoff opener. This was supposed to be like the huge celebration of the process worked. Look, this is what we've been working towards. And now we've arrived. And then they just lay an egg and get booed at their own place. Philly fans are brutal, man. Yet another destination that Kevin Durant should never consider playing for. Kevin Durant needs to stay right where he is and watch. I think he's going to go nuts in game two. He'll go nuts. Steph Curry will lay back a little bit. Clay will get his shine. That's just the way the Warriors are. They're very democratic in that way. They like to spread the love around. We have run out of time. Joe Spadoni, fantastic job. Whitley, thank you so much for all of your help. Terrific job. And thank you guys for listening. We've got Warriors World. The boys are coming up next, taking you 7-9 right here on 95.7 The Game.